Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host. I'm guiding you about a bit of the battle space of what I call the war for the free world, with some of the people who are doing the most interesting thinking about, and in some cases actually combating, in that war. And one of those is our first guest, Dr. Barry Rubin. He is the director of the Gloria Center, which stands for Global Research in International Affairs at Herzliya in Israel. And he joins us from there. Barry Rubin, you have been writing extensively for a long time, really, about the Muslim Brotherhood and what it is about. And I wanted to draw on your considerable expertise on the subject to explicate what is happening at the moment in Egypt, specifically the election now following on to on the heels of the election of the parliament of a president. Where are we and what's likely to come out of it, in your estimation?
Frank, let me start with a story that nobody is explicitly telling. It couldn't be more obvious. We were told for more than a year that the Muslim Brotherhood was really a moderate organization, was becoming moderate, and so on. And, of course, many of us disputed that. But now we have total proof, because in the presidential election, the Muslim Brotherhood has run an extremely hard-line platform, openly calling for a return of the caliphate, Sharia state in Egypt, and all this. The mass media, which, and an expert and so on, who told us that the Muslim Brotherhood was now moderate, have not responded by admitting that the nature of the campaign waged by the Brotherhood shows that they were wrong all the time. So they have chosen, in the presidential election, the second round of which will be held on the 16th and 17th of June, the Muslim Brotherhood has chosen to go openly radical. Presumably, and I think this might be a major miscalculation on their part, to pick up the Salafist vote, which was one quarter of the vote in Parliament.
Now, Barry Rubin, remind us again what the differences are, if any, between the Muslim Brotherhood on the one hand and the Salafists on the other.
Well, there are not fundamental ideological differences, but there are important tactical and strategic differences. The Salafists want to go much more openly and much faster toward an Islamic state, Islamic Sharia state. And the Brotherhood has been more cautious, step by step and so on, but it's abandoned that pretense to a large extent in the presidential election. One thing we've definitely
Barry, let me just make sure I'm clear about this. It is a pretense. This difference between timing and tactics is, as you say, not in any way a dispute about the ultimate end state they seek.
Sure.
It's just how to get there. And the Brotherhood's now indicating that it's prepared to become much more aggressive, much more rapidly paced in achieving that goal.
Right. It's one thing for you and I to say that based on evidence. But when the evidence becomes publicly undeniable 100%, that's a new
different
stage.
Kettle of fish. Yeah.
I think that one of the reasons why this has happened is because people say that victory and getting into government makes Islamist groups more moderate. In fact, it makes them more extreme. And this is what we've seen. As the Brotherhood gained confidence, it became more openly radical. By the way, a mistake that their Turkish counterparts have been much slower to make. That's a good example of being very cautious.
Yeah, but also, again, seeking the same end state in Turkey. And we'll come back to Turkey in a moment, Barry Rubin. Let me just ask you, we've had the conviction of Hosni Mubarak, the ousted former president of Egypt. How is that likely to play, this particularly the acquittals on some charges of him and some of his subordinates, how is that likely to play in this next stage of the election between the finalists, namely the Muslim Brotherhood's candidate, Mohamed Morsi, and the regime's guy, the former regime's guy, Shafiq?
Well, I would definitely not call them the former regimes. Let me lay out very quickly and get to the court actions. The Brotherhood is running straight out radical Islamist explicitly, with no pretense. Shafiq is running as, I'm going to provide calm and stability. And the way I would put it is this. If Mubarak had died or been disabled or been replaced by the establishment, Shafiq could have been the president of Egypt in 2010, early 2011. Now, his enemies want to paint this as a continuation of the regime and something bad, but the fact is, if you have to choose between him and a revolutionary Islamist party, then I think that Shafiq looks a lot better. And he's been very responsible in his statements. I mean, he says things like, I want to bring economic stability. I don't want to get into war with Israel. I mean, he has not been doing the whole demagogic thing.
Okay, so but how does that play now in the election cycle that Mubarak is...
Depends on who wins.
Well, no, I understand, but is this conviction on some counts and acquittal on others likely to play to the advantage of one or the other?
Yeah, well, we don't know until we see the vote, but the Muslim Brotherhood is saying this is horrible, it should have been executed. And Shafiq is saying, okay, you know, we've had enough people thrown in prison. Let's move ahead and have freedoms that people don't have to be afraid to be thrown into prison. The question is, how will the vote? It would take me a while to lay out the not.
Just give me your quick prognosis.
It's going to be close. It's going to be close, and either side could win. It's hard to. Are there people who voted for the Islamists in the parliamentary elections who are afraid of instability or think they have enough power and will vote for Shafiq? How will the Salafists, will they turn out and vote for a Muslim Brotherhood candidate?
Will some, I guess, just add to that list, will some in the streets at the moment vote for the Islamists as a protest against Shafiq as what they perceive to be a continuation of the regime? Go ahead, very quickly.
Yeah, but those people are mostly kind of liberal reformers, and they're not that many, and they have to decide, do they want the Muslim Brotherhood in preference to? A lot of people have to make a lot of decisions. Let me make two central points here. Number one, this is all less important than it seems, other than as an indication of what the Egyptian population thinks, because the Islamists control parliament. And so all they have to do, if a guy gets elected president they don't like, they just have to write the constitution with a weak president and a strong prime minister. And then Parliament will pick an Islamist prime minister. This is a point that's simply not being made as urgent. Secondly of all, violence. If Shafiq wins, there'll be more violence. And whatever, there'll be more violence. I mean, so things aren't going to be easy. So, I think that people miss the point that the Islamists control the government. And, again, they are writing the Constitution, and they can write the Constitution the way they want to. The key thing on the horizon is, will Shafiq and the military come together at some point in future? And only that could pose a balance to Islamist rule in a Sharia state.
If Shafiq wins. Our guest is Dr. Barry Rubin of the Gloria Center in Herzliya. He is the author most recently of Israel, An Introduction, and also of The Muslim Brotherhood, the Organization and Policies of a Global Islamist Movement. Barry Rubin, we don't have time to do justice to this, I'm sorry to say, but very quickly, what's your take on what's happening in Syria at the moment and where we should be as Americans specifically on this question of the future of Syria?
The Obama administration is doing nothing on Syria. The battle between Syria and Syria is, on the one hand, the Syrian regime backed by Iran and Hezbollah, which is a regime allied with radical Shia Islamists. On the other hand, a mixed opposition that includes some Islamists, but also kind of army deserters and reformers and Druze and Kurdish nationalists. What should the U.S. do? Simple. It should help the moderates in the opposition against an anti-American pro-Iran regime and also to strengthen them vis-a-vis the Islamists in the opposition. It's doing nothing, and in fact, inasmuch as it is doing things, it's actually helped the Islamists in the opposition. This is a disastrous policy. Now, we're not talking about military intervention. The opposition has asked for two things: creation of safe havens and a no-fly zone. There would be ways of doing this. They could help arm the moderate elements in the opposition by choosing precisely who to give the guns to. They're not doing anything. They're just observers. My opinion, the regime will eventually put down the rebellion and then resume its close alliance with Iran. But if not that, the Obama administration's policy has made an Islamist takeover, if there is a overthrow of the regime, they made an Islamist takeover more likely. This is 180 degrees, exact opposite direction
of what we want. All right, Barry, we have to let go at that. Thank you very much for joining us, as always, for these important updates. We will be watching closely what happens in Egypt and Syria and look forward to your counsel throughout. Next up, we will be speaking a little bit more about Iraq with Heather Robinson, what they're up to in this Syrian gambit on behalf of Iran. Straight ahead.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
It could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by Heather Robinson, an independent and rather intrepid journalist. She is the editor-at-large of Algaminer.com. And has also been a blogger for the Huffington Post, among other outlets where her works have appeared. She has written recently about a very interesting story. The evidence provided by a former member of the Iraqi parliament that Iran is increasingly calling the shots in Iraq. And that has bearing on what we were just discussing with Barry Rubin, the ground game, if you would, now underway in Syria, and, you know, terrorism and Lebanon and so much more. So, Heather Robinson, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Great to have you with us. And tell us about this parliamentarian and what we should make of his warnings about what's happening in Iraq at the moment.
Thanks, Frank. Yes, Mikhail Al-Alusi, an incredibly brave man who I've been interviewing for years now, has often been really the canary in the cave. He's been ahead of the curve on many things, to give you a real quick background, went to Israel some years ago to promote cooperation between Israel and Iraq. And for this,
a hazardous thing to do.
Children. He's done a great deal to promote cooperation and security cooperation among democracies. And he tells
but
me
say
that
again, Heather, excuse me, but say again, his children were killed because he took that initiative
yes.
with respect to Israel?
Yes. He went to Israel to attend a counterterrorism conference, and his two grown sons, who were in, you know, young men helping him build a political party in Iraq, were killed, were murdered. By apparently as payback by the extremists, because their father had taken this bold stand and promoted cooperation between Iraq and Israel, which is something of a taboo in Iraqi society. Although he tells me, Al-Lucy tells me, that there are more people than one might guess who share his views or at least tolerate them. He feels that the moderates in Iraq do exist, but we don't hear about them. They don't make headlines. But he's been telling me recently, and also to insert, he's a two-time, elected twice to the Iraqi parliament, so he's a former parliamentarian, ran as an independent on this platform of counterterrorism cooperation among democracies. And he's well known in Iraqi society, partially because of this terrible story of what happened to his sons. And of course, so many ordinary Iraqis are victims of terrorism and can identify. He says Iran has turned Iraq into a way station for transporting weapons and fighters to Syria, that Iraq is increasingly dominated by Iran since the U.S. troop withdrawal in December. In February, he told me that Iraq's central bank was processing hundreds of millions of dollars a day, more than usual, and that this money was being carried in suitcases via Syria into Iran to circumvent the U.S.-led embargo. And, of course, this was reported, the improprieties in the central bank, a couple months later. But he was telling me for quite a while now, and he says that at this point, billions of dollars are just simply being funneled from the Iraqi central bank into Iran. That the, to quote him, he says that the U.S.-led embargo, unfortunately, is a joke. Iran is getting huge amounts of money in the billions through the Iraqi central bank. Iraq is being used, according to him, to strengthen Iran. Iran is
now Heather Robinson. Let me just make sure I'm clear about this. This is a former parliamentarian who is something of a maverick, as you say. But what he's making here are allegations that the government of Prime Minister Maliki is directly involved in helping circumvent the sanctions on Iran, the financial sanctions specifically through the central bank of Iraq, and in other ways is enabling Iran to exercise influence and support its proxy, its client in Syria. Is that right?
Yes, at the very least, he's asserting that Maliki and other top members of the Iraqi government know about all of this and are allowing it to continue. Yeah.
Yeah. So what we're talking about, I guess, fundamentally is a not unexpected but pretty serious repercussion of the vacuum of power that has been created with the I would argue, hasty and ill-advised and complete withdrawal of U.S. forces from Iraq. Is that how you see it as well, that Iran is essentially filling the void, or would this have
yes.
happened even were we still there?
Well, you know, that kind of analysis, I report what, you know, my sources tell me, Frank, and according to this particular source, who I've found to be very prescient and very brave in telling me what he honestly believes, he says that, yeah, he is of the opinion that you know, essentially Iran is every day making inroads to take over, that they're bribing Iraqi politicians. He says that they have people he believes to be Iranian officials have offered him millions of dollars to stop talking about these issues, that they are, using the Iraqi central bank, that Iranian agents are using it to funnel money into Iran. He says that Iranian agents have set up small banks within Iraq because there were some regulations put in place recently to try and prevent this money laundering and transport to Iran. But he says that Iranian intelligence has found ways around all of this, that they've set up their own banks. And yes, in the bottom line, according to him, is that increasingly Iraq is being used financially, politically, as a means of transport of fighters and weapons, as a way station, and that Iran is, you know, it sounds like, yeah, he's saying that just Iraq is increasingly dominated by Iran, and this has accelerated greatly since the U.S. troop withdrawal in December.
Now, Heather, let me ask you this, and again, we're speaking with Heather Robinson. She is a very accomplished, independent journalist. She blogs at, among other places, the Huffington Post, and is, as we've been discussing, the editor-at-large of Allgemeiner.com, where her piece about this impressive and quite courageous former Iraqi parliamentarian Mithal al-Husi has appeared. And one of the other stories that's been coming out in recent days, Heather, is that the Iraqis have been able to considerably increase their oil output. And that has been good for the Iraqi economy, of course. It's also been good for world oil markets at a moment when there was some tightening of supply and therefore raising of prices. Are you seeing or do you otherwise get evidence that among the beneficiaries of that process or those oil revenues may be the Iranians as well, given what you've been telling us about their positioning in Iraq?
Yeah, well, you know, Frank, that I haven't specifically discussed with Mithal or anyone else. I mean, so it would really be speculation on my part to say, but, you know, again, he presents a picture of the country of Iraq in myriad ways just being increasingly dominated. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me.
Well, I guess that's really the point, is we're looking at a country that has seen the United States, very frankly, thanks to President Obama's decision to cut and run, really, essentially left open to, if not predisposed to, by Maliki, who is very much in the Iranian, you know, sort of circle, the obvious insertion of increasing Iranian influence and operations and personnel and banking interests and the like in ways that are almost certainly going to be highly detrimental, Heather Robinson, to both the Iraqis and to us. Thanks for this report. It's good to talk with you again. I hope we'll have a chance to do so soon. Keep up the good work, and please extend our best to Mithal. I hope that he stays well and that he continues to serve, as you say, as a voice of a warning to us all as to what's going on in his country and the neighborhood. We have to let you go. Thanks so much, Heather. Next up, we'll be talking with Mark Langeman about terror-free investing, something we might be doing more of to keep money out of the hands of the Iranians. Straight ahead.
To securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey, parents. Finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi, son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak...
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, I'll fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard?
Play frisbee in the park?
Ride a bike?
Kick the soccer ball around?
Or dance in your room?
Just move it your way.
Because nothing makes you feel better than moving every day.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
So be a player.
You'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Move it your way and be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
That's right, at letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
I'm a champion. Realize checks mechanism.
Hi, Shaquille O'Neal for Rad. This is not your normal PSA. Don't be stupid. Don't drink and drive. If you're going to go out and have a good time, it's fine. But designate a driver to drive home. Let's stop the madness. Don't drink and drive.
Public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Effney.
Welcome back. We're joined by an old colleague and friend, Mark Langerman. He is the Chief Executive Officer of Empowerment Financial Group and the Managing Director of the Patriot Fund. We're going to talk a bit about what the Patriot Fund is and why it is needed. But Mark, welcome back. You've been in the securities business for a long time, 28 years or so, managing a number of brokerages in branch offices around the country. You are a guy who has been really the pioneer, I think it's fair to say, of something called terror-free investment. And I think we're all familiar with what terrorism is about, and specifically the states that are sponsoring it. We were talking earlier in the program about Iran and Syria as examples. We'll be talking shortly with Gordon Chang about North Korea. There's, I guess, Sudan out there as well, among others. What is it that prompted you to start looking at how your skill set in the financial sector could be brought to bear to help counter the threat posed by these state sponsors of terrorism?
Frank, thanks again for having me. I appreciate the very thorough introduction and the work that you're doing as well. And just like you mentioned, there's still a lot of bad actors out there who are who are need to be held accountable for what they're doing to America, the type of life that they're promoting, and so on. And to answer back, about 5 years ago, I've been in the business quite a long time, as you mentioned, and about 5 years ago, I was at a conference in Washington, D.C., and sat in on a couple of breakout sessions, one of which you were leading, regarding state divestment from Iran's oil sector. And you were there educating people, trying to encourage folks and institutions, states, which has been very successful. So far, I believe there's almost 38 state legislatures that have passed or are considering passing legislation to divest their state pension funds from Iran. And so I was just really, I was blown away by your presentation as far as the fact that companies, public companies, are still doing business with state sponsors of terrorism.
Well, I confess that when I set this up, I didn't realize how much that that, you know, was stimulated by our earlier conversation. But I'm delighted, because I think at the point that you took this aboard, it was really in need of somebody like yourself to move us from the point where these pension funds at the state level were being divested to somebody who would be able to offer a similar kind of capability to individual investors. And that's, of course, what you've been doing with the Patriot Fund. Tell us about what that fund is doing, how you go about doing what you do, and how it's progressing.
Well, it's a publicly traded 1940 Act mutual fund, we like to call it. So it's a regular mutual fund that you can follow on your computer or at your brokerage firm and so on. And this really started, it was also kind of an interesting beginning there, because I was talking to the folks at Ascendant Funds. They were visiting, talking about some of their current products and so on. And I stopped my partner there in mid tracks. And I said, you know, this is all interesting. You guys have a great story. You'd be perfect for what I'm really trying to do, which is get this message out. And then we talked about terror-free investing, the problem. You know, we described the fact that the companies are still selling products and services, technology, financial services, helping with banking, all the things that go into keeping a terrorist network going. There's public companies that are helping to fund and support these guys. So he was very intrigued by this, and within a couple of hours, we were on the phone together again. He was in my office at first, and then we were on the phone together with the senior management, talking about how we can go out there and take this message to the American public, and not just take the message, but it's going back to where I first learned about this, Frank. I walked out of that room that day with a couple hundred other people wondering, wow, this is great. I'm really excited. I'm going to go do something about it. And then I went back to my firm, and all the investors and regular people in the room went back to their firms and realized there was no vehicle to take advantage of or to try and fight the economic war on terror, to exclude these companies who are doing business with state sponsors of terrorism.
Yeah. So let me just recap here. And Mark Langerman, again, is our guest. He's the CEO of Empowerment Financial Group and the managing director of the fund we've just been discussing, Patriot Fund. And you can find out much more about it at www.patriotfund.com. But, Mark, the point is that what you were trying to figure out and actually innovate was a means by which individual investors could play a part, a kind of socially responsible investing, if you will, aimed at preventing their money from being used unwittingly, presumably, to help these state sponsors of terror. And just quickly, tell us how that works. How do these state sponsors of terror benefit from an investment that I might make, for example, in, oh, just pick a company, General Electric, for example?
It's General Electric, according to the research we get today. I know it's an example, but General Electric is compliant right now in that they're not doing business with state sponsors of terrorism that our research, as far as our research
Well, give
goes.
Us a company that is, but just explain how it would be that an individual investor like me is, you know, somehow aiding and abetting these enemies of our country.
Okay, great. Right now, most people are surprised to find out that in today's day and age, with all the sanctions, laws, etc., there's still around 11% of companies in the Standard & Poor's 500 that are still doing business through either directly or through foreign subsidiaries in these countries.
11%?
11%, which is kind of – and by the way, that 11% represents right now about $1.4 trillion of market cap. And the significance of that, Frank, is that these are companies that need to – they need U.S. investor – they need to trade on U.S. stock exchanges. They need U.S. investor support. And this goes back to why this can be effective is because we still control in this country over half of the world's wealth, okay? If we mobilize, when we mobilize America's population to say, you know what, this is wrong. This is shareholder activism, right? This is wrong. We don't like you guys doing this, and we're not going to buy your stocks. We're not going to buy your bonds, things along those lines. That sends a message to these companies. It hits them right where it counts, right in their pocketbook.
This is exciting, but again, just so we're clear, the way these investments wind up helping these governments is that the companies that are still doing business with them are providing financial wherewithal and at least to some extent, I guess, Mark Langerman, they're providing political cover to the government of Iran and thereby enabling, as one example of these terrorist sponsoring regimes that you're targeting, thereby making it possible for them to continue to do things, including, as we've been talking about earlier in the program, you know, undermining the region in the case of Iran, building nuclear weapons, engaging in terrorism and the like.
Well, yeah, and let's give a couple of, you know, details. So, for example, Iran is currently hardening their nuclear program. From what we understand, right, they're building bunkers in mountains to try and harden it against attack, things along those lines. Someone had to sell them the earth-moving equipment. Okay, someone has to be an engineer to help on that. They don't manufacture earth-moving equipment that can do that job inside of Iran. They're buying it from Western companies. Okay, they're engaging engineering firms. So it's very deep. It's got the tentacles are deep and the roots. It goes a long way. So you've got the fund's performing very well on a relative basis right now. It's outperforming the Standard & Poor's 500, and that's our basic message. If you can get about the same returns, a little bit either way, and not support terrorism, we're really asking why not.
Yeah, why not indeed. That's the message, folks. Invest terror-free. Mark Langerman is the way to do it at the moment with the Patriot Fund. Check it out at www.patriotfund.com. Mark, thanks for joining us. Keep up the good work. We'll look forward to talking with you again soon. Next up, Gordon Chang on investment in Asia and here and what it might mean for you. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medication, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, you know, couldn't hurt to call, and I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the MetaSystem. Call 1-800-711-JUDY, 1-800-711-JUDY. The MetaSystem from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi. This is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program.
But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Dennis Prager thinks there should be a simple standard to textbooks.
I'll tell you how I think a textbook should be written. This is what happened. Period.
That is the role of the text.
And if nearly everybody who did something important in American history, if 78.9% of them were WASP males, then I want 78.9% of the textbook to reflect that fact.
I care about truth.
That's why I'm not on the left.
The Dennis Prager Show.
Up in the morning and out to school.
Weeknights at 10 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there.
So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home,
or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff.
Like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, joined as we are each week at this time by Gordon Chang, our friend and colleague who covers brilliantly, I might say, the Asian region. And boy, is there a lot going on there at the moment, including, Gordon, a tour by the Secretary of Defense of the United States. That seems intended to reassure allies that they can continue to rely upon us, and yet seems at the same time to be at pains not to offend the Chinese. Is it working, and does the United States really fundamentally have to choose here?
Yeah, the United States, of course, has to choose between its allies in the region and China, and we need to be much more upfront about it. Panetta's tour, though, is actually been a triumph in most people's books, largely because in Singapore, at the important Shangri-La Dialogue, which is the premier security conference in Asia, the Chinese didn't show up with a high-level delegation, and Panetta made a good speech about committing American forces to the region. Now, there are still concerns that the United States will not be able to base 60% of the Navy in the Pacific by 2020 because of budget cuts. And so the important thing really is that countries in the region are looking to the budget battle in Washington. But nonetheless, this is an important event, and it very well may mark a turning point in regional attitudes towards the United States.
Gordon, though, as we've talked about, and you've sort of implied as much in your response, there's got to be a lot of skepticism about not just that 60% of the Navy may not turn up there, but that it may not be much of a Navy by the time these budget cuts are finished, even if it does turn out that it's 60%. As long as the United States is at pains, as Panetta seemed to be, to describe this as a rebalancing rather than a pivot to Asia and not aimed at the Chinese, combined with these cuts in material ways in terms of our power, well, our sheer power, but also our power projection capabilities, are these people more likely to try to either make their own military capabilities more formidable, including those that might opt for nuclear capabilities like the Japanese, perhaps the South Koreans, the Taiwanese, who have that inherent capability, or make a separate peace with China?
Yeah, right now, there's so many different currents going on in Asia. And I mentioned the budget battle in Washington really is central to almost all of them, because more than anything else, that is a demonstration of American will. Chaz Freeman, who is a very Beijing-friendly ex-American diplomat, talked about the unresourced bluff when he's speaking about the pivot. And clearly, words like that have affected countries in Asia. Because when you talk to diplomats from American allies, the first question they ask is, what is going to happen to the Pentagon's budget in this year? Because everything really just flows from that.
Well, it's the right question, it seems to me, and I don't usually agree with Chaz Freeman, but I think unresourced bluff seems a pretty accurate depiction. Gordon, this is the anniversary of the Tiananmen massacre, and two things are prompt me to want you to comment on that. One is that I remember very vividly Bill Clinton indicating complete disbelief that the Chinese could suppress the internet or otherwise censor it. I think he said, good luck, in the most contemptuous way. On this anniversary, it sure sounds like the Chinese are doing a pretty good job shutting down a lot of the internet traffic that they think might have any bearing on, reminiscing or perhaps organizing around that anniversary. And it also raises a question as to whether the Chinese are the kind of people that we really want having an increasing influence in our own industry, entertainment industry specifically, whether it's owning theaters here or having a say in what kinds of movies are made or what's in those movies. What do you make of all of this?
Well, right now, there's so many things going on. One of them is that the Chinese enterprise is basically going to buy the AMC movie chain. And that, as you say, would give the Chinese an influence in what type of movies are being made in Hollywood. So this is clearly something that should not be permitted.
Not just for their market, but for ours as well.
Yes, and for a global market, because Hollywood makes films not just for us, not just for the Chinese, but for everybody. And the other thing that is worrying is that Hollywood studios are trying to base production inside China. And that's going to also affect what they make for audiences around the world, including in the United States. So this is something that we really need to be very careful in. I mean, I don't really care if China buys a rebar manufacturing plant in Illinois, which was the big example. But we're talking not about rebar. We're talking about soft power. We're talking about movies, something that critically affects opinion, not only here, but everywhere else.
Right. And Gordon, just very quickly on the business about Chinese censorship of the internet and the anniversary.
It's gone to ridiculous lengths. You can't search for Shanghai Composite Index in the Chinese internet because the Shanghai Composite fell by 64.89 points. That is June 4, 6489, standing for 1989. And so this has created a lot of very adverse comment among Chinese netizens because of the ridiculous lengths that Beijing is going to. They do have the technical capability to censor, but they're creating a backlash.
Yeah. Well, let's hope that that continues. And by the way, folks, if you're interested in more on this business, there's a terrific piece at the Washington Free Beacon today by Bill McMorris entitled Red Star Over Hollywood. I commend it to you. Gordon, one other thing that you've been covering in your inimitable fashion, and again, Gordon Chang is our guest, as he is each week, our duty guy on Asia, also that of Forbes.com, Fox News, and World Affairs Journal. And you've written, I believe, at World Affairs Journal recently about the North Koreans trying to extract new concessions out of the United States government by withholding, apparently, the nuclear test that seems to be in the offing. I was struck by two things. One, that a high-level delegation had been sent, including the director of the National Counterterrorism Center, for the purposes of trying to dissuade the Chinese from, I guess, launching their missile initially. But that the State Department spokesman is saying, quote, "We no longer have any confidence in any of their commitments," unquote. Does this mark really a sea change in U.S.-North Korean relations, or is this just another tactical shift on the part of the Obama administration, maybe keyed to the election?
Well, unfortunately, the Obama policy on North Korea is going in a very bad direction. For the first 3 years or so, Obama had a very good policy on North Korea by just ignoring them and following the lead of South Korean President Lee Myung-bak. Now we're sort of pleading with the North Koreans not to do all sorts of things because we don't want them to, for instance, detonate a nuclear weapon, because that would sort of derail the Obama administration's diplomacy represented by the so-called Leap Day deal, the February 29th agreement with North Korea, which was very ill-advised. So the Obama policy is going really in the wrong direction.
Yeah. Ill-advised and short-lived. It really didn't much outlast the leap year, did it? Or leap year day, I should say. Gordon, just in terms of the nuclear showdown and North Korean taking on the world, as you've described it in a book by that title, very quickly, do you see any real shift in their thinking in North Korea, irrespective of what the administration's posturing is du jour? Are they as determined as ever to continue to have nuclear weapons and to use them to prop up the regime and otherwise exert influence they wouldn't otherwise have?
Yeah, the new regime of Kim Jong-un is even more determined. We saw that because they amended their constitution in mid-April to state that North Korea is now a nuclear weapon state. That's a clear signal to the international community and to us that they're not going to give up their nuclear arsenal. So to the extent that there's been a shift, it's been in the wrong direction.
Yeah, it has. And it's no surprise, I guess, we should have understood that we could not take any of their commitment seriously a long time ago, as you've been warning quite assiduously. Gordon Chang, we have to leave it at that. We look forward to visiting with you again next week. And thank you very much, as always, for your insights here and elsewhere. Keep up the good work. And we'll look forward to talking to the rest of you again tomorrow as well. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.